Welcome to the Evident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this August the 18th on the West Coast, now August the 19th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. We'd like to welcome all those listening in around the world on Wind Talkers Radio Network, especially those of you in the U.S. military or former members of the U.S. military. Going to have a very interesting show tonight. And I have to tell you, in case you haven't heard, they're announcing the withdrawal of U.S. troops from Iraq. Now, before we get excited, what does that mean? Really, what does that mean? Are they going to bring those soldiers back to guard our borders? Or are they preparing them for something that looks like it's on the horizon? Right next door to Iraq, in fact, over in Iran. They seem to be gearing up for something by this weekend. And there's a lot of posturing going on. I referenced it last night very briefly at the outset of the show. And we may talk about what we know in that regard. Tonight's guest has been on Evident Footprints a few times in the past, and I have been a former guest on his former radio show, Voices from the Heartland. His website is theheartlandusa.com. He is a journalist, has had a number of pieces published on the internet regarding how one prepares for the coming chaos and insanity that's swooping down on all of us. And he is also a former Kansas State Trooper, as well as a PhD, believe it or not, in criminology. My good friend, by way of Marianne Ponder and Drew Malone Raines III, Dr. Greg Evenson. Dr. Evenson, welcome to the show.
Don, it's a wonderful event to be with you again. I always enjoy it, and it's good to be with you, dear friend.
Well, Greg, you've been on the air and off the air. I think you've been a guest ever since you retired from hosting your own show, and it looks like you're about ready to go into another one. Can you tell us anything about that?
Well, you know, Don, it's one of those things that presented itself kind of unexpectedly, and I have been the last 2 years traveling in the United States, border to border, coast to coast, visiting with folks all across the land as a guest in their areas, presenting a program of just exactly how do we deal with all of these traumatic events that could well be overtaking us. And this has not been an effort to get people riled up or anything like that. It's been more or less an effort to train them how to deal with off-the-grid lifestyles and exactly what to do, what not to do, how to do, how not to do, and so forth. And very successful. I've gotten to meet wonderful folks all across this country who are not looking to find their solutions necessarily politically, nor are they trying to, like you say, stir up any hornet's nest. They simply want to know what to do if things do get a little bit difficult. So that has been my thrust over the last almost 2 years. I left a radio show with Republic Broadcasting entitled Voices from the Heartland, as you mentioned earlier, and my show is about to make a comeback on RBN one more time on Republic Broadcasting. And it will be on Sunday afternoons, excuse me, at 2 o'clock on Central Time, 2 o'clock Central Time Zone. And it is a one-hour show this time. I had 2 hours last time, and it was just a little bit more than I could quite take on this time. But we'll be returning the day before Labor Day on Sunday, September 5th.
Okay, Sunday, September 5th. That's at republicbroadcasting.org.
Yes.
And for those of you on the East Coast, that's 3 p.m., those of you on the West Coast, that's 12 noon. And Mountain Time, I guess, would be 1 o'clock. So,
yeah, that's right.
Are you going to maintain sort of the same format you had before? Or?
You know, pretty much, Don. I of course, with the shorter time period, we won't be quite as able to cover as in-depth the subject matter that we're taking on that particular week. But it will be a fast-paced show. Call in, and I will have guests, and we will be talking about those subjects that maybe some others don't talk about, won't talk about, but we'll do it in a way that is very clear to everybody, and it's a wonderful thing to be able to be of service like that, especially in a time when our nation's history and is at stake. Certainly, its future is at stake. Our history is secure, but it still makes it difficult for people to say, okay, how do I fit into this? And we want to give them the tools, as I say, for their intellectual toolbox to be able to use in determining how they go about charting their destiny and maybe some things they can avoid to make that a little bit easier. But we'll be out there just like you are, doing our very best, and so many others that are trying to bring the truth to American people.
Well, that's great work that you're doing. Greg, I was wondering, you know, for the average listener out there that's maybe considering being educated in the various survival techniques that you are teaching, and also I think your discussions on what you see going on, it appears that more people, since the last time you've been on this show, a lot more people have awakened to what's going on. They're finally getting the message that we have been lied to, we have been promised things, everything is couched in secrecy and doublespeak, whether it's a law that's being passed or whether it's the status of the Gulf of Mexico or the financial system, our collapsing economy, it's basically evaporated. They just keep this ruse going on, and people are waking up. Are you finding that amongst those that you're helping, you're finding people outside of the, what we would call maybe the traditional patriot community? Are you finding regular folks that maybe worked an office job taking a particular interest in and what's going on because it's maybe affecting them financially or affecting their family, their children at school? Any thoughts you have on that?
You know, Don, you've hit it just about exactly in that people have, not necessarily because they wanted to, not necessarily because they went out looking on any particular day to build up their base of information where they felt comfortable in heading into this kind of stormy weather. And I found, just as you described, Don, so adequately, that people are searching in a way they've not done before. It didn't take week after week after week of broadcasts by Don Nikoloff or Greg Evenson or Drew Malone Raines or anybody else that's out there, the great people that are doing that work. It's been a kind of a reckoning that's occurred between just John Doe America and what they've been seeing in their government, what they've seen in the streets of America in terms of the changing police mission and the difficulties that people are finding in dealing with government at all levels. It's become so frustrating, Don, for people that they've said, what is going on here? Why is this happening? And those are probably the two most commonly asked questions that I receive on the road. And I try and put it to people this way. I said, look, I'm not a political creature. I'm really not. I don't talk about politics when I go out and do this training. But I said, you must understand that power, Don, power is one of the key elements. It's power and money, as I see it, that has motivated the American government and all the ancillary governments, the sub-governments, if you will, or state governments and any other government unit in the United States, whether it be a county commission or city council, whatever it might be. There is an agenda that has taken hold in America that says we are going to control you, every aspect of your life, everything you do, everything you contemplate. We are going to write laws for you so that you will do what we tell you to do when we tell you to do it, and exactly how we tell you to do it. And so it is an increasing pressure that has come upon people that has left them with very little choice. Freedom of choice, freedom to choose what you do, how you do it, when you do it, why you do it, where you do it, is all in great jeopardy. And people have come to see, Don, that it's not going to change. It hasn't gotten better. In fact, it's gotten worse. The intensity of that change, if you will, that Mr. Obama promised us has indeed come to pass. And although I refuse to lay all the problems at Mr. Obama's feet, the generation that he is addressing now and that he is president of is a generation that has seen the greatest change in American history in its government. So all this means, very simply, that we are having to try and bring to people a way that they can have some hope that their efforts will make a good, solid contribution to the ongoing prosperity of the government, of the people of this nation, and a common denominator which says to people, we are doing what is best for our nation, not just any group of people. We're not just going to give one area of commerce the edge. We're going to do it for the betterment of this country. And I think they're trying to do that. They're becoming awake, Don, to that need, and that's a very good thing. People have needed for a long time to change that attitude, get involved, and to do it right. And I just pray that our efforts and your efforts and all the rest of us will bring us to that new day. It can't happen soon enough.
Well, you know, we're being led by God to do what we do. So as long as we follow that pathway, I think pretty much we'll accomplish whatever work he has for us to do. I think, you know, if I were to surmise what one goes through as they listen to you speak and describe what it is that people are going to prepare for, there is some discussion as to the role of the individual. And a lot of people have allowed others to make their decisions for them. Their life decisions are made on a piece of paper or entered into a book. And that book is closed, and it's assumed that that's going to be the letter of the law, and everyone must follow that regardless of what rights have been trampled upon. Are you seeing the folks that you're working with waking up to their own personal and then collective responsibility in a deep spiritual sense?
And Don, once again, you framed this extremely well. Honestly, folks, I didn't write this down, but he has such a handle on this. And Don, your direction here is entirely correct. Look, this is maybe a two or three pronged agenda, if you will, that people are now pursuing, and it's a good one by and large. Number one, it is their personal position within for instance, the job they hold, the education they're trying to receive, folks that are raising families and doing all those things that have been done traditionally, generation after generation. They've seen that because of the direction the United States has taken in the last generation or two, especially, although it's been going on longer than that, their options, their choices for making their own destiny decisions has been almost completely removed from them. And because they are governed by decisions outside their control, they're increasingly frustrated and really almost in a low panic mode because they just do not have the ability anymore to make those decisions free of governmental interference. Now you take that alone. That's a huge problem on its own. But you add to that the weight of people who are saying, well, wait a minute, life is so fragile to begin with, and now you add this. Where does that take me? Where does it lead me down the road to my relationship with others and myself in my own faith and belief system and my connection to a greater universe? Where does that lead me? And so, Don, really, this is a maturing process that has taken people from the adolescence of indecision and their failure to carry through with things that they are personally accountable for and that I'm accountable for and that you are as well. We've been forced to reexamine just where we're going and how we're getting there. And that is not necessarily a bad thing. It's just unfortunate that there are too many people that are waiting too long to grasp that concept, and as a result, they have failed to pick up the gauntlet and to move ahead with it, and so they're caught up in this great rush, this great wall of water that's sweeping them down down a channel that they may not want to go, and to grab the side of the bank and pull themselves out is now made much more difficult. But they're doing it because there's really no choice left. And so what I'm doing, and again, what you're doing and many other talk show hosts and folks that publish, and we're doing this, we're trying to give people, as I said, these tools to help them over this very difficult time. And as a result, I think we are making headway. I think people are seeing that this is something that must be done for their own good and for their family's good. And ultimately, I pray that it's not too late and it will be for the greater good of America itself.
Mm-hmm. Well said. I guess I'm trying to put myself in the shoes of those that call upon your wise counsel and your experience and your training and of course your own intuition, your own discernment as to what is most important. We're experiencing a coup which has taken place of our government, but this happened roughly 100 years ago. This happened. This has been around for a long time. People think it's just beginning to happen right now. It's something that's developed within the past 2 years. It's been ramped up, obviously, because of all the material that we release that shows the fallacies of history and how we're being lied to in real time. So I'm certain that you run into a lot of people who are angry, and then you have those that have awakened and have, let's say, gotten off their duff, if you want to use that term. And maybe they're feeling some fear. Maybe a little bit of anger, maybe both, or maybe they're just curious and confused at the same time, wanting to learn more about what is going on. To be sure, I would venture to guess that you run into all types. But what do you see bringing everyone together in the manner in which you experience that?
Well, Don, it is in an ultimate drive to hear and to be a part of the truth. That's easily said. I hear it often, but I don't hear the commitment of an awful lot of folks to be able to stand up to what that truth is. And I'm talking about ultimate truth here, not just somebody's opinion or somebody writes a book or presents an academic paper and all of a sudden we think we have the absolute wall of truth. Look, mm-hmm. Truth, Don, is a very tenuous thing. It's not because truth does not have substance or horsepower or legs, as people say. It is because truth is so easily manipulated. Truth is fragile when people refuse to accept, again, ultimate truth, and ultimate truth being that which is put on display, examined, under the microscope and found to be exactly that which it has been presented to be. And that kind of statement lends itself to a little confusion. What I mean is, when you and I discuss the subject here, and we give examples, and we put it out there for people to evaluate and say, you know, I think Don Nikoloff has got a point here. I think he's right on the issue. And our discussion goes into that, and we give examples to people, and we say, well, this is the history of it. This is how it matured. And people are using two or three levels of discernment here and assessment. They're using their own experience. They're using someone else's experience that they're close to. And then they put it up against history or evidence, if you will. And I love evident footprints because it is, I've said to you many times on and off the air, you are such a wonderful, tremendously talented researcher I would be honored at any point to share a research subject with you, because you are a man that knows no limits, no boundaries, and you get to the ultimate nucleus of truth, and that is a rare commodity. And I also told you that with your research skills, I would hate to be on your bad side if you ever were looking for something to rein me in or to expose something that I had done that wasn't very good. Don Nikoloff, folks, is a wonderful man of to model after and to feel very comfortable with and take a great comfort in the research he does. But what it amounts to, Don, having said that, and I mean that most sincerely, you have helped people sort through the layers of fat, if you will, on these issues, trying to get to this, as I said, kernel of truth. And when you reach that, when people have reached that across the nation, and they've done it in part by listening to folks like you and me and others, and reading that which they believe to be true based on the evidence in front of them, they've come to some startling conclusions, and among those are simply they've been lied to, that they have been set up for what we are currently experiencing collectively as a nation. They have seen the collapse of the dollar. They've seen geopolitical manipulation. They've seen the transition from freedom to socialism and some would say slavery in our government. Whatever your position, just know this. We are in change. Mr. Obama was right about that. But it's not the kind of change that we value in this nation. And unless we get back, Don, to truth, and we get on that pathway that takes us to the front door of truthful, honest, moral, upright living, then we don't have much to look forward to. And it will not happen because Greg says so or Don says so. It will happen only when the American people are honest, number one, with themselves, number two, with those closest to them, and number three, with the people they deal with in government and in authority over them, and just say, no, this is a limit. You're not going beyond this. I will not accept that. We together will not allow you to go there. And if you do, then we will change that government, and we will get people that will respond to help us. And when that happens, when that day happens, and I believe it's close, and the government knows that. They know that their days are limited to ruling people's lives. I am hopeful, Don. I don't know, of course, but I'm hopeful that the American people will arrive at that moment when they can say, no, we're not going to do that anymore. We're going to do the right thing. We've been responsible for our own demise, and we're not going to do that anymore. We're going to be accountable, and we're going to take this task on and complete it. And when we do, we will have the chance for a new republic.
Mm-hmm. You know, the proof of that reality you just described and our responsibility in having allowed this to happen really shows itself in the fact that, and you used the word under the authority, it seems to me as a constitutional republic, the United States looks to its government to be its servant. The servant of the people, not an authority over the people, if you consider that. It's become that through a series of catastrophic financial events, two world wars, and numerous other wars. But we have a war every 20 years in this country since this country's birth, on average. That's hardly a way to bring about peace, which they always tell us in political circles. War brings peace. No, war brings death and destruction. And we have to see it for what it is. I'm not criticizing you. I think you hit the nail right on the head when you said under the authority, because the reality of how our Constitution was created and the country as a republic, that government should be serving us. We should be calling the shots. And they're certainly paying themselves well to destroy the country. So any comment you want to make on that?
Well, thanks, Don. And I was very interested in where you were going, because you see, when you mentioned this cycle of war and peace, you really with that have drawn us right down to the floor on this. We're at the bottom level of why we are where we are. War and peace is a continuing cycle. We only have peace because we have a lull in the fighting. It is something that, if you look historically at war, war has been generally used as a means of expansion of one's boundaries, of conquest of other nations or people's resources, and the gathering in of people, so that people are subject to the control of a few, and in that. Control, you will find a huge collar of authority, as I mentioned. And you see, government exists for control, to control people and to issue that ultimate authority, whereas government should issue simply to give people a coordinated grand central station, if you will, for all of the things that people engage in, whether it's commerce or transportation or medical advancement, the things that we all would point to and say, this is progress, this is human progress and achievement at its best. And many of those things I mentioned are, but unfortunately, there have been a few that saw that in conflict, there is advancement of their own personal monetary gain. We manufacture the tools of war. We are responsible for financing those governments, and I say we, meaning these people who are in control, that are the authority over people. And so when we see money, power, and control all coming into the same vortex, coming into that perfect storm that we talk about so often, then you begin to understand why the nature of conflict is what it is. None of us, or very few of us, can find a good, valiant, solid, ethical reasons why we fight and we kill, and many of us die. Simply in itself, that being a good thing. And no rational, sane human being would say that. But yet, we over and over and over we hear, "Well, this is for freedom. This is to give liberty to someone else, or this is to take away the power and authority of an evil dictator, Saddam Hussein, Mao Zedong, Joseph Stalin, Adolf Hitler." You know the list of the people, and these, you see, it's all trying to be, all of this is trying to be used as justification for why we go to war and why we pursue people in the hills of Afghanistan and Pakistan, why we're there and why we're trying to keep the next wave of war from reaching the shores of the United States. War will be present as long as men see that it is a vehicle to gain power, gain money, and one more time, to gain control over somebody else. It is a formula that is perfect in its ferocity, and it's one that has continually changed the history of the world, the peaceful intent of men and women across the planet to live with each other find reconciliation and do something, hopefully and completely satisfactory and good. See, we just don't see it. All we see is that result, which is war. And so down until the people of the planet, but especially the American people, because we are at this point the most powerful nation in the world, until we react and govern ourselves responsibly, then we will be the target of those who say, we don't care who you are, what your history is, you can say freedom all day long and we don't see it. And so we will fight you. We may die, we may lose, but we will fight you. And that is a losing proposition for everybody. We must change this, if nothing else. But we're banding together and saying, let's resist tyranny in government, let's try and get our nation on a better path, and let's do it quickly, because if we don't, then those who want to see war and profit from war continue will continue. They will continue.
You bring to mind September 10th, 2001, when we had two separate announcements, first from Dick Cheney, then from Donald Rumsfeld, that the Pentagon had lost $2.3 trillion. This on the heels of Dov Zakheim's departure from the Pentagon and his escapement to Israel. Where do you think that money went, and why is that allowed? Why is that permitted?
Well, Don, I'll tell you, to try and give people an idea of the source of and the ultimate direction that money takes is a trail so torturous that it defies explanation or understanding. But let's put it this way: whatever monetary unit we go by, whether it's a dollar or a franc or a Deutschmark or a euro or whatever it might be, we have found that the amassing of these dollars through resources and business and the exchange of goods and services across the planet, the money that has been created over the last 1,000 years, let's just say as a minimum, almost defies understanding. We're talking about trillions and trillions, even into the quadrillions of dollars, and as the we'll use that as a monetary unit. And the money you see can be channeled into any number of holding vehicles, investment vehicles, and those and banks, of course, and institutions that trade this money, making money from the money that they are trading. And so when we begin to say, all right, well, people can hide anything. They can take whatever it is, products or ideas or even money, and they can put it somewhere, and eventually it's off the books, and then it's kind of forgotten about, and it's not the numbers are so great, Don, that nobody can really account for it all. And so the power brokers of the money in the world, those people that hold the reins to the banks on the planet and to the trading institutions, are able to, like a train in a train yard, sidetrack those train cars loaded with goods and so forth. And they do that with money the same way. And they'll put it under various names and organizations and trusts. And all of a sudden, it becomes institutionalized money instead of private money sources, and it disappears. It simply goes off book. And so when Rumsfeld and Cheney were dealing with these huge sums of money, they simply traded them through the emerging markets in the subcontinent areas of India and China. And let me tell you, they may say that this country or that country is an enemy, or we don't agree with them, or we don't have anything in common with them. Let me tell you, they have one thing in common, and that's money. And so if money can be made, I don't care who these people are, ultimately it is the great common denominator. It equalizes all politics, all efforts to change cultures, And people just say, I want to be wealthy beyond anybody's imagination. And in order to do that, I will do anything required to be a partner in this great chess game of moving hordes of money across the planet. It's been doing that for far in excess of 1,000 years. But it has come to a point where the planet has been industrialized, and we have made great progress. But at the same time, this cycle of war and peace we were talking about has also channeled money. Money is a great a source of profit for people that side with others doing war. This blood money that comes out in theaters of war is probably the most terribly immoral and insane application of money. But huge sums of money, as the Rothschilds have found through history, has been their greatest source of power and the accumulation of even more money. So I don't want to start going in a circle here, but I hope that begins to answer your question. It's simply a matter of people who are cornering the great influence that money buys them, the options, as they say, to be bought through money, and it's been narrowed down into a fairly small number of very, very wealthy and very powerful people on the planet.
Yeah. Well, you are addressing the issue. The reason I pose that question is because I wanted to make another statement. If money is something that garners politicians, world leaders, and world business leaders, the owners of banks and corporations and holding companies, as you mentioned, whether they're insurance companies or derivative hedge fund brokers, pharmaceutical companies, oil companies, if the dollar is worthless on the international market, which it pretty much is agreed that it is and has been for a number of years, and if this country is bankrupt, they're really not as powerful as they think they are. Certainly, to have a lot of something that's worthless doesn't give one power. So it's an illusion. We fall for the illusion. And really, our solution is not in getting our hands on more of that illusion, but coming up with a different system. Do you want to comment on that?
Oh, I tell you, again, as only you can do it, you've taken an awful lot here and funneled it right down to the bare necessities. The reason money still continues to be used at this moment is not because it is worth anything. It's simply that we are all under the illusion, all of us, and I mean every single last one of us, even if we understand it in a different light, we believe that money has value because we believe it has value. It is the confidence factor that green dollar bill will buy me a hamburger at a certain institution, or that it will do something else for me. It is simply a piece of paper with printing on it. But I have the confidence that if I walk into a store or wherever it might be, that I will receive the value, whatever that is at this moment, that I have for that green dollar or $10 or $100. And so the intrinsic value is zero. The confidence value that I believe that it holds, that I'm told that it holds on any given day, is the reason that the money is still useful at all. When we begin looking at other things of value on the planet, whether that's resources, and that's especially true, and that's a tremendous harbinger of wealth far beyond paper dollars, whether it's oil or diamonds or gold and silver, those things that have for eons been the real benchmark of the value of anything, when we are able to accumulate a storehouse of those kinds of goods, then we understand why the dollar was backed by gold and silver. It is something that we as a civilization have held as valuable for several thousand years. That has not changed. That has been a constant. And we have something beyond confidence in a simple piece of paper. We hold a gold coin that we believe and know because it has always held value beyond that of what we simply call confidence, or the dollar bill that's made of paper and we hold in our pocket. This is something that has real value as opposed to confidence value. And so when you grasp that and you can apply that in your life, and then you translate that into other things, whether that's wood or steel or lead or whatever it might be that is useful in the country as a whole and civilization in industry, then you see why we have a number one system of barter, which is the paper dollar, and then we have the secondary system, which is those things of real value that you and I would barter for in an emergency situation because we know they have ultimate value to our survival.
Mm-hmm. When I think, let's see, we're in our 77th year of being bankrupt. When we went off the gold standard in 1933 under Franklin Delano Roosevelt, basically our money became worthless. Now, in terms of confidence value, I agree with you. There comes a time, though, when the confidence is going to shrink mightily with inflation that's been predicted and, you know, that we've been forewarned of. They basically call the shots when they want to tighten the vise on us, tighten their grip on power and control. But their power, as I see it, is illusory. And, you know, certain of us come under attack by the minions of the powers that be because they themselves are gutless. They really are. They're evil people, and yet they can't carry out their own sordid acts themselves. They have to bid this on someone else. And of course, there's always financial remuneration for those types. You know, I'm bringing this point up because it's very evident that all of this is an illusion, as you stated. It's one that people can extricate themselves from, I think, when they realize that voting out all the Democrats every 4 years or every 2 years or every 6 years is not the solution, because who are you going to replace them with? The Republicans. They're two sides of the same coin. And it's a coin that's not backed by gold. It's backed by fraudulent paper. I think the paper instruments have been basically treated like the contract law that they have created, which was very covert, very disingenuous from birth. One is tricked into the system because your parents or your grandparents were told, well, you have to do that. That's the law, even though it wasn't the law. They just said it was. They played word games with us and really made people fearful of the consequences if they didn't follow that. Those are organized crime tactics that the mafia used when they first infiltrated cities like New York, Brooklyn, the Bronx, all the suburbs, the boroughs were havens for organized crime. And if you didn't pay tribute to the local bully, then you suffered for it. Your business got burned down, or your storefront got smashed, and your wares were either stolen or destroyed. People were even killed to set an example for the rest of the business community that non-payment of these protection monies, as they like to call them, would result in a similar act. So out of fear, people complied, just out of fear. Fear is an underlying current here through this whole thing, and it's imaginary. That's the thing. This is all based on threats and illegal acts, unlawful acts. Again, violating the law to accomplish the end, and it's overlooked. Why? Because it's done by the very people that are responsible for creating the laws.
It's interesting you said that, Don, and it's very interesting. I was following that very closely. You used the word tribute just a little bit ago. And you see, when the citizens of Rome were required to give tribute to Caesar, they initially began to do it with a certain appreciation for government at that time in Rome, and Caesar as a dictator, and they felt comfortable with that. It was okay because they received something as a result of their tribute, and the illusion, as you said, fast-forwarding to today, that we still owe that tribute to government and to those in authority over us, to the extent that we all, well, no, I shouldn't say all, but there are still significant numbers of people that feel that they owe, they have a certain obligation that the government has convinced them that they owe taxes that are paid to the government to protect them through the Army and the Navy and the Air Force and the Marines and so forth and police departments, and that they owe the government tribute to continue to make decisions for them is perhaps one of the most grossly maligned efforts to misuse government that I've ever heard of. But it's going on along with various other entrapments that people are forced to pay tribute to the government in fees and other taxes on their property and so forth. It is, as you said, an illusion. The authority for which they claim that right does not exist. It has not existed, but we have been made to believe that it does. Therefore, every April 15th, we queue up and we go to the post office and make sure that our tax return is in the mail, and we know this subject. It is simply one of many that is an agenda used by the enforcers, to go back to your organized crime thought, the enforcers of a corrupted idealism in America has brought many people to a sense of complete disenfranchisement from their government, and as a result, we have chaos in local cities that don't have the money or resources to do what they need to do to help their people live well. The infrastructure is breaking down, and on the list goes. And Don, as a result, we have people that are so desperate to be able to remove themselves from that sinking feeling, that quicksand that they are in, that they're making themselves available to come to these classes. They follow, as we said earlier, radio programs, and anywhere they feel they can get truth and they can extricate themselves from this. And that is the great movement now. It's how do I get out of this mess? And unless we are able somehow, by a miracle of God himself, I hope we can, elect some people this fall to make the ultimate a transfer from what we have been to what this nation needs to be, I really believe that our days as a free nation, if you will, and when I say free, that's only in the most minute terms, even those days are in our past.
Yes. Now, someone with your background, I hate to use the term law enforcement, because really anyone who was in what today is called law enforcement, before it was called a peace officer.
That's correct.
Or, a keeper of the peace, if you want to use that term. And I'm curious as to how you see police agencies on any level, whether they're local, county, state, federal, how are they different from when you were yourself employed, let's say, by the state of Kansas?
Sure. Don, I can tell you that there was a, I hate to use this word again, but a mindset. There was an agreement between the people in government and the folks that were the citizenry, that the police agencies were there for their protection, that peace was the ultimate goal of any police officer, and I counted myself in that group of people. When I began in law enforcement, we simply answered calls of distress, And we tried to maintain the peace in a community or a county or state. And it was an honorable goal. And for the most part, we were able to achieve that. But then in about 1980, some will say slightly before, some say slightly after, but roughly as a timeline, 1980 was a turning point for peace officers and community policing into what I call the mission essential military mindset that said now it's us against them. It's no longer my state trooper friend that I grew up with in my hometown that played softball with my dad and went to church with us on Sunday and grieved with us at funerals and was out in the street directing traffic and keeping us safe. It went from that image to one of more along the lines of security services in Europe, and I always make the leap to morphing into an SS-type organization that had the machine gun on every corner, and you were compelled to march down to this area and do whatever it was they required that you do. Where in our country, in our history, was that a good thing to aspire to? Well, it simply isn't. And people have said, oh, our police are now almost our enemies. And I'm afraid to say, Don, there is truth in that. I hate to say it, and not everyone is like that, but many of the people in leadership roles in the various policing agencies have accepted that. Why? Because it came from the federal government. Why? Because it was ultimately the role of government to tell you what to do, how to do, and when to do, and because that is their ultimate goal, to box us into a blind canyon that we simply can't get out of unless we go one by one in single file out past the guards. And that is a police state. That is something, Don, unacceptable to this nation. And I'm afraid ultimately we may have to resort to some kind of physical confrontation to throw that off. That cannot continue in our nation if we're going to have any kind of freedom.
Mm-hmm. It's funny, well, not funny, it's peculiar, we'll say, that you mentioned 1980, because I was thinking to myself, well, would this have been put into place by the Jimmy Carter administration, set up for Ronald Reagan to take over?
Mm-hmm.
And it appears that on many levels that was the case. After all, George H. Scherf, Jr. became the vice president and had worked with the CIA. So the intelligence agency was brought into line to serve the purpose that they were going to conduct internationally under the Reagan administration. And although they had us looking up at space shuttles during that time and for a number of years afterwards, the corruption had gotten underway. This massive, massive financial corruption that you've been talking about. They just decided they were going to basically sell out this country, steal the public properties from the masses and privatize it, put it under the control of private organizations that could skim the money and basically keep us from knowing where it was going.
No one has done research anywhere near equal to you about just what kind of vehicles they're using, and I know we don't have quite enough time to get into that, but it is simply a matter of everywhere money could be hidden and given a false front. The government and others have done it, and I tell you, you have been one of the leading stars in getting that out there to the people.
Well, do you give badges out for that?
I should, shouldn't I? Now, I wish I could, because if I did, you'd have three or four of them, I tell you.
Food stamps. That's. Oh, I'm just joking. Well, you're too kind. I'm trying to basically illustrate that these things have been going on for a long time, and we've just not been paying attention to them. But there is history.
That's right.
And we're witnessing the culmination of that right now. I tell people, you know, you think there was any difference between Eisenhower and the short-legged Mac Daddy usurper in office right now? There's no difference as to how they were unlawfully allowed to take the head of this country in term. But, you know, they can argue, well, they're not the head, official. They're not the commander in chief, really, of the armed forces. They're the corporate president. They're the corporation's president. They're the chosen. Those were the chosen ones. But all the atrocities that were committed overseas by Eisenhower during the war that have gotten little recognition. And at the same time, there was an infiltration underway in this country that really began before the turn of the 20th century, but 1942, it became official on paper when we secretly joined and were the first signatory on the UN Charter. And that was January 1st of 1942, not October 24th, 1945. So for some 4 years plus, we had already been involved in financing Russia or the Soviet Union through World War II and allowing them to infiltrate our country and actually move into positions of power in local and state politics and eventually in Washington, D.C. I literally tracked that movement in my Eisenhower research. And we have the same thing going on today. Only today we have people from Israel in the cabinet.
Yes.
I mean, what is it going to take, Greg, to wake people up to what has happened here?
Don, it's all out there. And a couple of very close friends of mine who are in broadcast and research. I visited with him today, one of them. And we agreed that there's nothing more that you can do, I can do, or anybody can do. I believe it has all been laid out very carefully in front of the American people, time after time after time. But the corruption that has been allowed and therefore signed onto by the American people, whether it's the acceptance of certain levels of corruption in the government because these folks are getting entitlement checks or they're getting benefits of some kind, and they're not going to rock the boat under any circumstances. They're not going to get involved in the conversation because they have something to gain with the status quo. So that's not going to change, at least not very soon. Then you have an area or a number of people that simply say, this isn't happening. I'm a Democrat. I believe in what's happening. This is good. That's there. You have a number of people that respond that way. And then there's another group of folks that are trying to make a change but are so overwhelmed by those first two groups and others just as equally on wrong-headed courses that I really believed on that we are heading for an implosion that we cannot avoid. And what I'm trying to do is get people ready to survive that, to get through it. And then when cooler heads prevail and when the rascals are finally identified and thrown out, then maybe we can rebuild. But I don't see it going another way, I'm sorry to say.
Yes. Well, we're about out of time, you answered that question, and certainly I'm in agreement with your comments. We're not condoning violence.
No, not in any way.
You know, Every person in this country who's lawfully here has the lawful constitutional right to defend themselves.
That's right.
From enemies outside and within.
That's correct.
That's specified in the Constitution. And so, hopefully people are going to keep waking up and apprise themselves of the facts. And in the meantime, they can begin getting prepared for whatever might happen. Worst scenario, they'll have good training to go camping on a weekend.
Good reading. Well, I tell you, Don, with folks like you and so many others that we've mentioned and others that we have not mentioned but that are out there, please, folks, just align yourselves with that which you know to be the ultimate truth. And stay with people like Don Nikoloff and Drew Raines and others who are just out there doing their level best day by day by day by day on your behalf, and be grateful for them. Don, it's been a pleasure to be with you as always. You're a great friend, and I respect you highly.
Okay, Greg. Any contact information you'd like to give out? I do know you have that on your website, or would you just like to repeat
the website?
That's right.
Folks can email me at greg@theheartlandusa.com. Greg@theheartlandusa.com, and I'll be glad to get back to you as quickly as I can. In most cases, a day or two. I'm on the road right now. It might be just a little bit more, but let's stay in touch, everybody, and try and help each other through this, and we have some hope if we do that.
Okay. And, Greg, please give my best to your wife, Liz, and keep up the great work. May God be with you at all times, and I trust you always teach people the best way, whatever that may be.
That's right. Thanks, Don.
Okay, thank you for being on the show, Greg, and I look forward to another visit from you in the near future. And good luck with your show as well.
Thank you, and God bless you as well, and take good care.
Okay, thank you. You have a good night.
Thanks.
Folks, that wraps it up. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com, and tonight's special guest, Dr. Greg Evenson. Be sure to tune in to his show September 5th at 2 p.m. Central Time. That's on Sundays on republicbroadcasting.org. Special thanks to Wind Talkers Radio Network. And I also want to thank Seth Hendrick on the sound at bbsradio.com, Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join me tomorrow night when my special guest will be former U.S. Marine Drew Malone Raines III. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.